My guest at this time is Dr. Everett Piper. He is president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. He attracted a lot of attention back in 2015 for his open letter pushing back against the idea that colleges and universities must cater to the protests and victim mentality of allegedly aggrieved college students, famously concluding his letter, "This is not a daycare, this is a university." He is now speaking out about the clamping down on free speech on college campuses, namely speech that does not line up with the current liberal ideology. He has recently written a response to the University of California Berkeley's decision to cancel the speech by conservative author and commentator Ann Coulter. And Dr. Piper, thanks very much for being with us.
Greg, honored to join you. Thank you.
We should point out to folks that they can find your column on this on your own website at Oklahoma Wesleyan University or at Christian Post, where it first appeared. And you point out very early in the article that you're not necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with whatever Ann Coulter was going to say at Berkeley, but that there's a much larger principle here, correct?
Yeah, my point in writing the column is not to say that I champion Ann Coulter or not. That isn't the point at all. The point is the classical liberal arts institution. The liberal arts institution was founded some 1,000 years ago, let's say at Oxford, for what? To educate a free man and a free woman, to educate culture and what it means to enjoy liberty and liberation, thus the word liberal. The classical liberal is someone who stands for freedom, for liberty, and for liberation. And what we see today within the academy, the American academy, is the shutting down of ideas. We see ideological fascism, if you will, rather than academic freedom. And the conservative voice, such as mine, such as yours perhaps, is actually more classically liberal because we're arguing for an open, robust exchange of ideas. Why? Because we can trust truth to judge the debate rather than politics or power. And what you see at Berkeley right now is proof to my point in that article, that free speech was not born at Berkeley. It was born at Bethlehem some 2,000 years ago, because without the truth, you shall never be set free.
And we're certainly going to get into that deeper in just a moment. But in terms of what's happening on campus right now, here's one of the earlier paragraphs in your piece. What has happened to the ivory tower? Whatever became of the free exchange of ideas? Whatever happened to the value of a good argument? When did the desire to learn become supplanted by the right to be affirmed? When did education become more interested in celebrating personal feelings than pursuing objective facts? So you've laid out the questions. What's your best answer for that? How has this mission, as you've laid out, the original liberal arts mission, gotten to the point where we are now?
Well, I would go back to Richard Weaver's 1948 seminal work that was titled Ideas Have Consequences. And what was his point? Ideas have consequences. They matter. And when you teach good ideas, you get good culture, good kids, good community, good government, good church, etc. When you teach bad ideas, you get the opposite. And what we see right now is Barack Obama's pastor is actually right. Jeremiah Wright was right. The chickens are coming home to roost. We've taught lousy ideas for decades in the academy, and we're seeing lousy behavior on the campus green and in the campus quad today. These student rebellions, these snowflake rebellions, trigger warnings and microaggressions and safe spaces are being called for because we've taught these kids this intellectual mush and this ideological narcissism and nihilism. A good quote that I love from G.K. Chesterton is this, that when you get rid of the big laws of God, you don't get liberty, but rather thousands of little laws that rush in to fill the vacuum. And that's what you see right now. We can't live by 10 simple laws any longer. Jesus narrowed it down to 2. We can't live by just 2 simple laws. So what do we see? Government largesse and ideological fascism rushing in to fill the vacuum where we're being told what you can say and what you can't say at any given point. Under the banner of tolerance, we're being told that we're intolerable. We hear these people say things like, I hate these hateful people. I'm sure that nothing's sure. I'm absolutely confident. There are no absolutes, and I can't tolerate your intolerance. It's self-refuting at every turn. And the reason we see this, going back to your question, is we started teaching this type of nihilism and relativism and intellectual mush some 3, 4, 5 decades ago.
Let's go back 2,000 years now to the point you made earlier that freedom came not from Berkeley. It came from the cradle in the cave in Bethlehem. Obviously, that idea is not going to be well received on most college campuses right now. But flesh that out for those who haven't perhaps thought about it that much. They probably think back to it, to the First Amendment to our Constitution, perhaps. But explain why the freedoms we enjoy now really do emanate from there.
Well, again, what is emblazoned across many a library header what is on the shield and the university seal at many campuses across the land, even back into the continent of Europe? Veritas, Latin for truth. And where do we get that concept? From the very words of Christ. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. It's the paradox of discipline and freedom, of liberty and law, and freedom and fences. You have no liberty without law. You have no freedom without fences. You do not have the freedom to perform music if you don't discipline yourself to the routine, the rigor, the rhyme, the rhythm, the laws of music. You can't play the sport if you ignore the boundaries and ignore the referee and ignore the coach. You are only set free within the context of truth, judging the activity that you want to be free to engage in. When we abandon the concept of truth, you don't get freedom, you get tyranny. And that's what you see in this rebellion, the snowflake rebellion in the streets of Berkeley.
We're talking with Dr. Everett Piper. He's the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. And just to follow up on the point you made, another couple of paragraphs from your piece, quoting you now, serious educators ought to be guided by the implied objectivity of that light, by the immutable and not the malleable, by the right, the just, and the true, not by the transient constructs of tolerance, trigger warning, safe spaces, microaggressions, and whatever happens to be politically correct on a given day. As Oz Guinness said, all truth is true even if no one believes it, and all falsehood is false even if everyone believes it. Truth is true, and that's just the end of it. One of the things that I don't know if it puzzles you or frustrates you, Dr. Piper, is the fact that one of the reasons you get a lot of attention for the way you push back on this is because you're one of the only ones who's doing it. What's your reaction to the administrators, whether it's at Berkeley, back when you first wrote the letter in 2015, it was the University of Missouri in the headlines and so forth. Why are so many administrators either giving in or afraid to stand up?
I'll be very blunt here. Lack of spine, lack of courage, lack of conviction. We're more interested in capitulation and compromise. We're more interested in a conversation than we are in demonstrating conviction and purpose and principle. We don't seem to have the heart and the soul to engage in things that are right and just and true. We call for justice, but we deny that there's a judge. We argue that we want tolerance, but then we act intolerable to anybody that we can't tolerate. And our administrators and our presidents and our professors parrot this pablum. They don't have the conviction in the spine. Frankly, they have been drinking the Kool-Aid of safe spaces, and they don't recognize the distinction between safety and goodness. The great lion Aslan in the Chronicles of Narnia is said to be good but not safe. I'll repeat that. The great lion Aslan is said to be good but not safe. Well, let me paraphrase that. The great lion of education, the great lion of the liberal arts, the great lion of the academy should be good, but not safe. Safety is not what good education is about. Goodness should be what good education should pursue. But you've got to have a measuring rod outside of those things being measured, or you can do no measuring. C.S. Lewis, you have to have the measuring rod of truth with a capital T and goodness and justice and mercy. And those things all come from the Judeo-Christian ethic that our country was founded upon. And if we don't have that ethic any longer, we're going to see fascism and tyranny and power prevail rather than live by principles that give us freedom.
Some folks may be listening to this and wondering what the atmosphere is like on your own campus. And I want to look at this in a couple different ways. First of all, how divergent are the views of the speakers that come to your campus and of debate in general at Oklahoma Wesleyan?
We can have any debate on my campus. Now, we have closure. Just because you have debate doesn't mean you don't have an opinion. I could have Jesse Jackson come to campus, and I could have Tim Scott come to campus. We would have a debate between the two of them. I would bring closure to that debate, and I would say who I agree with. Obviously, by the virtue of who you're talking to, I'd probably agree with Tim Scott more than I would Jesse Jackson. But the point is, President Piper, the politician, the pundit, the professor, these people of power shouldn't be the one judging that debate. Truth should. And if we ever lose track that truth is the referee of that debate, it's going to digress to what David Horowitz calls the rule of the gang. In his intellectual autobiography called Left Illusions, he talks about why he converted from political left to political right. Not religiously, but politically, sociologically, and principally. And he says it's because he recognized that his worldview was subject to the rule of the gang, and it frightened him. Truth allows us to have the freedom to prevail in that debate between Jesse Jackson and Tim Scott and not get sucked into political correctness and safety at the expense of goodness and truth.
What was the reaction to your letter a couple of years ago?
You know, Mike, I'm very clear about who we are at Oklahoma Wesleyan. There's no student that comes here that doesn't understand that we are conservative, that we're Christian, and we're proud of it. So my students, by and large, almost universally, championed it and applauded it. The faculty, likewise, said thank you. And I got thousands of emails and text messages where people in the secular academy emailed me and said, I don't agree with your religion and I don't like your politics, but I read your piece and I wanted to write you and say thank you for having a spine and speaking up. This needed to be said.
Last question, sir, and it goes back to what you were saying before about the trajectory that we're on, where the pursuit of truth is being elbowed out of the square on campus and beyond in many cases by nihilism and government largesse and only approved ideologies and so forth. So without more people like you standing up, whether it's at college or beyond, where are we going to be in a generation?
Well, I'm an optimist. I believe what Christ told me, and that is his church will prevail. The gates of hell will not prevail against the church, church with a capital C. I believe that the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture is the salt that actually awakens a culture and keeps it healthy rather than allowing it to rot. So I'm an optimist in the end. Between now and the end, I don't know what's going to happen. Will I be standing relatively alone within the academy? I don't know. There are some glimmers of hope out there. The University of Chicago issued a statement that shows some hope, and I see a couple other college presidents stepping to the forefront. But we are few and far between right now. And here's what I think needs to happen that will result in change that's good rather than bad. Parents, grandparents, moms and dads, aunts and uncles, stop sending your kids to these institutions that teach this pablum and send them to a place that actually teaches what's objectively right and real and true and good.
And before we let you go, sir, the attention you've received for this has also led to an opportunity to write an entire book on this subject that I believe is coming out soon. What can folks expect?
The title of the book, it'll be published by Regnery, and the title will be Not a Daycare, Why a Coddled Nation is a Crippled Nation, and it will be released in August.
Dr. Piper, we'll call time there. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
All right, blessings. Thank you.
Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, his column on his response to the University of California, Berkeley, canceling the Ann Coulter speech can be found at Christian Post or at the website for Oklahoma Wesleyan University. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.